Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. From revelations of Arnold Schwarzenegger's love child to sexual assault charges against the head of the International Monetary Fund, this week's headlines are dominated by powerful men behaving badly. And they're hardly the first. From John Ensign to John Edwards and all the way back to JFK and well before, these stories keep coming. We're taking a look at the dynamic of sex and men in power today. This hour on Point, sex, lies, politics, and powerful men. You can join the conversation. How are you processing the sexual news this week? The affair, the love child, the alleged attack. What are these men thinking? What are you thinking? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Paris is Peggy Hollinger. She's Paris Bureau Chief for the Financial Times and has been covering the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case and the response in France. Peggy Hollinger, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us today. How is the news, all this avalanche of news that we've seen out of New York on the IMF head being processed in France, Peggy?
Well, hi, Tom, and thank you for having me today.
Yes.
Well, to be honest, it's an incredible shock to everyone. I think there's a real sense of, well, certainly at the beginning of the week, a sense of incomprehension and disbelief at the allegations. And we have to start any conversation on this saying that nothing has been proved.
Yes.
And we still don't know the details. So, you know, one has to be very careful about this.
Of course.
But it has also, I think, in France, raised a lot of questions about the sort of acceptance of behavior in private life and the fact that that just is not touched normally by the press it doesn't come out into the public arena. And now a lot of questions are being asked about whether politicians' private lives and their behavior in their private lives perhaps deserves greater scrutiny.
We haven't heard a word from Strauss-Kahn since his arrest, but just to get a sense of the man, here he is in a 2010 interview just last December with Reuters editor-at-large Chrystia Freeland. He was talking with her about the U.S. economy. Here's the then IMF chief, Dominique Strauss-Kahn.
The need to boost, still to go on boosting the American economy is very important, not only for U.S. citizens. That's a point I want to make. The American economy is still one quarter of the global economy and has a role which is bigger than this 25%.
There's the man in his grand position, maybe in his glory, today in the Rikers Island prison to be released at some point, not yet as we speak, to house arrest, in a sense, essentially, in Manhattan. What is the profile of Dominique Strauss-Kahn in France, in his native France, Peggy?
Well, he is possibly one of France's brightest economists, a man of amazing intellect, a man of great charm. He was widely respected. He's been a former finance minister. He's an adept politician. And he has represented France internationally and honored France. I mean, never forget that, you know, in many ways, this is old Europe, that this is still a Latin country, the sense of honor, the idea that he carried France's image abroad, and he did a very good job at the IMF while he was there. So there was a great deal of pride in Dominique Strauss-Kahn and his role in the international financial crisis. So when you then bring it back to domestic politics, he was also the man that was supposed to bring the Socialist Party to power next year. He had, in poll after poll, he clearly beat President Nicolas Sarkozy in the second round. And whether that would have been the case in a year's time when we have the election remains open to question, because obviously the closer you get to the poll, the more presumably he's been out of France for many years. If he came back and was day-to-day in the dirty campaigning of politics, his popularity might have come down. But people did really believe that he was the one that was going to bring the left to power, and there's such disaffection with Nicolas Sarkozy that many in the center actually would have voted for him as well.
So as prominent as
right across the board.
Yes, and just as prominent as you could be there, and quite possibly to have been the next president of France, and yet this news does not seem to come as a complete shock to people. We're reading reports that Sarkozy himself, when Strauss-Kahn went off to the IMF, said, don't get in any elevators with interns. You know, don't embarrass France.
Absolutely. And Dominic Strauss-Kahn was once on the front page of Le Parisien, which is a tabloid newspaper here, very, very highly read. And he was called, the headline was, The Great Seducer. And, you know, you have to understand that in France there is a culture of seduction that is, it's very different from the cultures in the United States or in Britain. The idea of a sort of sexual jousting, which is sort of it's playfulness, if you like, and if it's expected of anybody, it's expected of their politicians. But also, a virile politician is something. It's rather an advantage to be a virile politician, someone who conquers women. If you think about Chirac, he allegedly had lots of gaps in his diary to make impromptu stop-offs at secret liaisons. François Mitterrand had a secret family, if you like, and that was discovered towards the end of his life. These are things that are regarded as a sign of the virility, a sign of the attraction of the politician, and it's rather an advantage. So Dominic Strauss-Kahn had that allure, but the thing that's now emerging that I think has shocked people, mm-hmm. and again, I stress, you know, he is innocent until proven guilty.
Yes.
But the thing that people are discovering now is that sometimes his behavior was really, really quite forceful. And he clearly really had a very big appetite for women. So I think there's now this questioning over whether maybe that should have been looked at more closely. But again, as I said earlier, this idea that you separate the private life from the public life, in the past it was regarded as his business as long as it's legal. The problem here now is that we have allegations of violence.
You say quite forceful, but that sounds a little bit euphemistic this week. I mean, there are stories of him essentially attacking other women. And again, these were not criminal cases, so we don't know.
Exactly.
There's no verdict. But nevertheless, I mean, sort of ripping women's clothes off, even the reporters interviewing him.
I agree, but the thing you have to remember is charges have not been brought mm-hmm. in those cases, mm-hmm. and he has not yet had an opportunity to deny them. So, yes, maybe it is a bit euphemistic, but we don't actually know the details. I would agree with you that many of the details that are emerging right now do raise serious questions about his behavior. And as a result, I think this is part of the shock in this country that to what extent, you know, has his behavior, we don't know, but has it gone beyond the bounds of accepted, you know, the game of seduction? Mm. And should we possibly have been more alert to that? Should the media have reported a lot of these? The big scandal is that one of these women actually made the claim on national television, and the media did not really follow it up. And I spoke to one very senior journalist and asked him why, and he said, well, she never filed a legal complaint.
And this time, maybe the French not just sniffing at American Puritanism, but maybe thinking twice about all this. Peggy Hollinger with the Financial Times joining us today from Paris. We're very grateful to you, Peggy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Goodbye.
I want to turn now to Arnold Schwarzenegger country and Marisa Lagos. She's a politics reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. She's been covering the Schwarzenegger story, and what a story it's been. She joins us from San Francisco. Marisa, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So there we're hearing about France processing the news on the Dominique Strauss-Kahn front. What about your neck of the woods, California, and the man who was only very recently governor there? Are Californians in shock, or is this just kind of Arnold?
No, I think there's a lot of shock here. I'd actually say that the public is far less divided here than it sounds like they are in France. You know, this is something he admitted to fathering this child. He's obviously been in a high-profile relationship with a high-profile woman, Maria Shriver's from the Kennedy family. She was a broadcast journalist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of sense of betrayal of her, of his now five children that we know about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the public, I mean, a lot of Republicans that supported him when he first ran for office, I think are feeling pretty duped, especially considering there had been allegations of sexual misconduct in the past. I mean, which are, you know, to be fair, very different from what sounds like it could have been a consensual affair. But I think there's a lot of anger, a lot of shock, and maybe call us Puritans, but given the fact that he was in office for so long and sort of put forward this front of such a happy and united family life, I think there's a lot of feelings of betrayal and sympathy for his family.
Remind us of the calendar of how all this came out. When did he leave office? When did the news first emerge of trouble in the marriage, maybe a breakup, and then the child fathered by the maid of 20 years?
Right. So Schwarzenegger left office in January, and it was only last week that publicly we found out that Maria Shriver and he had separated. It turns out she had actually left in January, sounds like after he told her of this affair and child. But it took about a week for the LA Times, who had first broke the split-up story, to track down enough evidence to really put it out there that this child did indeed exist. So we found out late Monday, kind of early Tuesday. And since then, it's been kind of a media frenzy descending. This woman actually retired from the Schwarzenegger household after 20 years there sometime this year, had bought a house in Bakersfield, an hour outside of the city. So there's been a lot of media there. There's been a lot of attention focused at Schwarzenegger and a lot of questions about whether this, how long this went on, whether who knew what when. And really, did it impact him as governor? We don't know. I mean, there's not been any proof that he did anything improper, used public funds for anything improper. But I think that's the question a lot of people in the Capitol press corps have been asking.
And what about Arnold Schwarzenegger? There was a bidding war at Cannes in recent days to make two more installments of The Terminator, starring Schwarzenegger again. He'd signed to star in a third movie, reportedly working on an animated children's series based on his life and a memoir. What's up with all that?
Well, that's what's sort of interesting. Everyone I talked to on Tuesday had said, this won't matter in Hollywood. You can do whatever you want there. But sounds like yesterday he announced, his lawyer did, that they're putting this all on hold. And it kind of is all up in the air, really.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about sex, power, and politics. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, and the sexual conduct of men in power. First, a little sound here from the streets of France. Michelle Miller of CBS News went out into the streets of Paris to hear some French response to the Dominique Strauss-Kahn story.
Let's wait for proof, this man said. He can do things for France. It doesn't surprise me, said this woman. It's a shame that he wasn't more careful.
Now, of course, it's criminal charges in the case of Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the until just a couple of days ago head of the IMF. Attempted rape, sexual assault, and right on down the line. It's a different thing in the Schwarzenegger case, and yet it is turning heads in a big way. And it's not the first time that Arnold Schwarzenegger was up against these kind of allegations when he ran for governor of California. Just days before the vote, big allegations or reportage in the LA Times about a lot of women who said he had really come after them. Here's Schwarzenegger on the eve of that vote saying, I'm sorry.
Yes, it is true that I was on rowdy movie sets. And I have done things that were not right, which I thought then was playful, but now I recognize that I have offended people. And to those people that I have offended, I want to say to them, I'm deeply sorry about that, and I apologize, because this is not what I tried to do.
Who saved him in that moment? Well, it was his wife of many years, Maria Shriver. She spoke up in the face of those allegations of sexual misconduct in defense of her husband.
You can listen to people who have never met Arnold or who met him for 5 seconds 30 years ago. Or you can listen to me. I advise you to listen to me.
Listen to me. Those words with kind of a bitter edge today. And this month, before it was discovered that Arnold Schwarzenegger had fathered a child with a member of his household staff, he announced that he and Maria Shriver would be separating after 25 years of marriage.
We both love each other very much. We are very fortunate that we have four extraordinary children, and we're taking one day at a time.
And then it just blew up from there. Marisa Lagos is with us this hour from San Francisco, politics reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. She's been all over the Schwarzenegger story. And with us right now, we're happy to have her back on the show from New York City, is Nancy Gibbs, executive editor of Time Magazine. If you haven't seen it already, their big cover is Sex, Lies, Arrogance, What Makes Powerful Men Act Like Pigs. And there's a pig right on the cover with little asterisk, no offense, men, but that's in very small type. Nancy Gibbs, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
It's a catchy headline, a little bit glib, but you really have dug in deep to both of these cases in your reporting
on what's going on here. These are very different. You've got one, on the one hand, a crime. On the other hand, maybe a crime of the heart or an affair. What do we learn from this, Nancy? Is this just the age-old story, once again, of men in power?
Well, they are very different, but what they have, and I think the distinctions are important, obviously. Only Dominique Strauss-Kahn was hauled off to jail.
Mm-hmm.
But what they share and what is in common with many of these stories, and I think what's troubling and why this is not just about, you know, the private lives of public men, is when they involve an abuse of power. In Dominique Strauss-Kahn's case, obviously it's an allegation of the most extreme abuse of power, a violent abuse. But in Arnold Schwarzenegger's case, we're talking about someone who worked for him, who was economically dependent on him. And this is where you get into a realm of sexual harassment, of, you know, the impropriety of a professor with a student, of a boss with an employee, of a president and an intern, where the power relationship makes the very idea of consent very different. And that's why I think both of these cases have been conflated, even though obviously in their circumstances they're very different.
Let's look at the criminal case first for a moment. We'll come back to California and Schwarzenegger, but here you have Dominique Strauss-Kahn, incredibly powerful man. I mean, at a time when, you know, whole countries are kind of wobbling and the IMF is stepping in, you can't have much more power, at least on the finance front, than he has. And here he is in this fancy hotel in Manhattan, 32-year-old African immigrant who's there to, you know, clean up his room. And by your reporting in Time magazine, Nancy, he comes naked out of the bathroom. And again, these are all the allegations, but this is how she tells the story. Chased her down, grabbed her, locks the door, tries to assault her in the bedroom, then drags her to the bathroom, makes her perform oral sex. She flees the suite, finally manages to get away, and he takes off for the airport. How can a man in such a position of prominence, a smart guy, we're told, from Paris, think he can get away with that?
Well, this is what we know, and what you've just described is what the New York City police has said, and mm-hmm. this is all we know. We have not heard, you know, his defense lawyers have said that the evidence will not support the idea that this was a forcible act. They're implying that they will argue that whatever occurred was consensual.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, this is now he's been indicted. This is all going to play out within the legal system. I think what has been troubling to people has been now the more and more that we have learned about what Dominique Strauss-Kahn's track record might have been. The most public incidents with him did not involve violence, but it did involve, again, this abuse of power. When he was sternly rebuked by the IMF in 2008
mm-hmm.
for having had an affair with a Hungarian-born economist who worked for him.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote a letter to IMF investigators about how she had felt that she was really in a damned if you do, damned if you don't position. She, you know, when he began coming on to her, she felt very pressured that of what it would do to her career, what would it do to her if she were to resist him. And Dominique Strauss-Kahn at the time apologized publicly. He apologized by email to IMF employees. The investigation resulted in a ruling that while he had shown a serious lapse of judgment, that he had not abused his position or actually harassed her in some actionable way. And so, you know, the question is, how much of a warning sign was that for someone who, as you know, Peggy had said, who was his nickname was the Great Seducer. He was someone who almost bragged about how much he loved women. He actually, so ironic, just 2 weeks ago had an off-the-record meeting with reporters from the French paper Libération, and he said to them the three obstacles to him becoming president were money, women, and the fact that he was a Jew. When he mentioned money, it was because running as a socialist, his rather lavish lifestyle, mm-hmm. the multiple homes that he owns, the fact that he was photographed getting out of a friend's very expensive Porsche. This was causing him a problem with the Socialist Party, that he lived a little bit too flamboyantly to be a standard bearer for the socialists. But when he says, you know, that women will be a problem, he says, yes, I love women. So what?
But your reporting has been very tough before. Interestingly, at points, his wife has said, you know, politicians have to be seducers. She seems to kind of be at some meta level in on it. But then other women, you report on the case of Tristan Bannon, who was now 31 years old, a goddaughter of Strauss-Kahn's second wife, who came to interview him and says, what happened in that interview, Nancy, by her telling?
what she described, and at the time, it happened in 2002, she said, and she, her mother actually, who was herself a Socialist Party official, talked her out of reporting it because of the fear that this would ruin her daughter's life, that she would become this troublemaking girl. But it was not until 5 years later on a television show that she described a scene in which she had come to interview him. And initially he was saying that he just wanted to hold her hand because that was the only way that he could talk about what they were talking about. And then he gets increasingly forceful and ends up with, you know, her kicking him repeatedly and him trying to take her clothes off and undo her bra. And she said it became a violent attack. And, you know, this was obviously a very disturbing description. And again, she never pressed charges. She has since this week, with the revelations of the accusations of his behavior in New York, has said she's reconsidering that, partly because, you know, she now feels that maybe her story would have more credibility. And, you know, this is very difficult because, again, these are allegations. He hasn't had a chance to deny them. Nothing has been presented as evidence in court. But what French lawyers have said is, yes, we have had women come to us with these stories about his behavior. They wonder about, would they be successful? Do they have standing to bring charges? And they all talk about their fear that they would not be believed, that it would do them much more harm than good, that the pursuit of justice or vindication was not worth the odds that they just would be dismissed as either women with a grudge or women who weren't credible.
And yet the funny thing is that people all around Strauss-Kahn seem to be very, very well aware of this kind of dynamic. You report how the French newspapers reported Sarkozy warning him on his taking the IMF job in 2007 to, quote, avoid taking the elevator alone with interns. France cannot permit a scandal. Marisa Lagos in San Francisco, strong echoes there of the discomfort, to say the least, of women who have agonized over whether or not to step forward around the Arnold Schwarzenegger story. Back before he ran, or when he was running for governor in 2003, the LA Times did a big story, you know, worked hard to get women to sort of share what had happened, some kind of jaw-dropping stories there. Now we read Tracy Weber, who was one of those reporters, now with ProPublica, saying she's gone back to those women and they're just, you know, they were really pilloried for coming out against the candidate for governor, Schwarzenegger, at that time. And now here's kind of proof of the pudding against Marisa.
Well, you know, I think there are different situations, but I think the infidelity does sort of, in some people's mind, lend more credence to these stories. I mean, I went back this week and read that story in a 1999 Premier magazine had done a story. And, you know, what struck me is sort of the similarities between these. I mean, again, in every case of accusations against Schwarzenegger back a decade ago, these were women that worked on movie sets under him, who waitresses, people who didn't, you know, that he was in a position of power over. And very similar, you know, grabbing women's breasts and buttocks under their clothes, pinning them against walls, really sort of using both his physical and, I think, not political at that point, but political within the context, power to overtake women and take advantage of them.
And sometimes in those reports, in rather public settings, he'd be interviewed on a television talk show, and as soon as the cameras went off, by that report anyway, go straight at the breasts of the interviewing anchor.
Yeah, and what's really striking about these stories, if you believe them, is the way that there was people around him who worked for him who really were sycophants and apologists for this behavior. They either looked the other way or flat out denied it later. And these include women that worked for him. So I think that there is some similarities. And again, we don't know all the details of this affair, but as it's been pointed out, the woman he had the affair with was a maid. She depended on him financially. She worked in his home for 20 years. So there are, I think, questions about, you know, even if it was consensual, whether or not there was any coercion, and obviously the appropriateness of any extramarital affair, but particularly with somebody who works under you. And, you know, I think that there is also similarities in the way in which, in both cases, back in 2003 in Schwarzenegger and now with what's happening with Strauss-Kahn, political supporters were quick to dismiss allegations. And, you know, again, we all have to say that these have not been proven, but I think that there is a tendency when somebody is in a political arena to be even more apologetic for them if you are a supporter of their political, you know, position.
Sure.
And so it is, I think, dismaying. And what you mentioned, that former LA Times reporter, you know, talked about how these women really felt victimized twice, once from when it happened, and then again from when their stories were really dismissed outright. And as we heard earlier, you know, Maria Shriver had gone to bat for Schwarzenegger and really is credited with saving his candidacy to some extent. And I think that, again, that's also why there's so much anger over this affair, that, you know, she had supported him for so long and really given up a lot for him, and sort of became the victim of something that assumedly is one of the reasons she was so against him running for office. You know, the Kennedys, both there's a number of issues, but there have been infidelity in the family's past as well.
Sure. And of course, it's not just Strauss-Kahn, it's not just Schwarzenegger. I mean, the lineage here is long. Republican Senator John Ensign of Nevada just recently resigned. He admitted to having an affair with his wife, with the wife of one of his staff members. And in a public statement, this was last year, he expressed remorse over that infidelity. Here's John Ensign.
Last year, I had an affair. I violated the vows of my marriage. It's absolutely the worst thing that I've ever done in my life. If there was ever anything that I could take back in my life, this would be it.
And it got weirder. Allegations of a payoff to her family. In light of that affair and attempts at payoffs to keep it secret, he resigned. He gave a farewell speech to the Senate on May 2nd. Here is then Republican Senator of Nevada resigning, John Ensign.
When one takes a position of leadership, this is a very real danger of getting caught up in the hype surrounding that status. Oftentimes, the more power and prestige a person achieves, the more arrogant a person can become. As easy it was for me to view this in other people, unfortunately, I was blind to how arrogant and self-centered that I had become. I did not recognize that I thought mostly of myself.
Of course, that's exactly the way it can roll, and it's not just in Ensign's case either. Psychologists have looked at this. Here's Dr. Frank Farley, a psychologist at Temple University. This was on CBS in 08, talking about the John Edwards scandal, and he offered this explanation of why politicians may be so prone to affairs.
The career of politics involves all sorts of change, variety, novelty, risk, uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be natural rule breakers, and there's all the admirers, the opportunities. This is why it happens so frequently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It attracts a certain kind of person mm-hmm. into that lifestyle.
Natural rule breakers, they might say natural leaders. Nancy Gibbs, you've looked a little bit at some of the research done here about people in power, not necessarily men, and sexual behavior.
Well, there's a fascinating study that's about to be published that in which some social scientists looked at the behavior of people within a business setting and found that the higher they rose, men or women, the more likely they were to consider or commit adultery. And the theory was that partly with success comes opportunity, but also it comes with a kind of confidence that can lead to a sense of sexual entitlement. And when you add to that, if there is a sort of risk-taking personality that often goes along with successful people, and the reality of that Marisa talked about, of being surrounded by enablers who may have a personal or political interest in protecting you, in covering up for you, then you have, you know, a great many circumstances that make it easier and more likely for someone to act on their opportunities. Now, having said that, this is the other exception I think, you know, we have to make, is that there are a great many men in power who do not behave this way. And so it is not as though this is true of all powerful men by any means.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about sex, power, and politics. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, and the sexual conduct of men in power. Nancy Gibbs is with us from Time Magazine. Marisa Lagos is here from the San Francisco Chronicle. She's been following the Schwarzenegger story, Time with a big cover story on these cases this week. In all this reporting, the Time certainly, and here, these are very different cases. One, criminal charges of sexual assault, of attempted rape. The other, an affair, a child born to an employee of Arnold Schwarzenegger, they are not comparable in those senses. And yet, these are powerful men, men in power, and the sexual conduct, the sexual license is head-turning. Of course, when it's a crime, that matters. Lots of response online here. Kathleen says she's appalled sexual assaults being labeled as men behaving badly. Well, truly, this is badly right over into the criminal realm. She says rape should not be treated so lightly. No intention of doing that. James says this isn't an issue of power at all. This is a human issue. Power just raises the stakes by first concealing the offense, then, once the matter's uncovered, spotlighting it. No question about those. Gerald says, and what's the point of power if it doesn't let you do things denied other people? Sounds like primate band dominance behavior to him. And then one more here says, President Kennedy, Tiger Woods, an athlete, an actor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, all had beautiful wives, so why did they cheat on them? Because they could. Because they had power and were famous, this does not make it right by any means. And, of course, it's happened again and again. Here's Mark Sanford, June 2009, the Republican governor of South Carolina, holding a press conference confessing his extramarital affair.
Did I want to pay the price? Did I want the consequence? No. But I said this to her down there. I said, I am fully aware of the price. I'm fully aware of the cost. And I'm willing to do that.
So he said to his Argentine lover, August 08, John Edwards, ABC's Nightline interviews him here. The presidential hopeful of North Carolina discussing his affair. When asked for specifics about the length of that affair, Edwards talked about family, privacy, public.
My family is entitled to every detail. They've been told every detail. Elizabeth knows absolutely everything. I think that's where it stops in terms of the public, because I think everything else is within my family, and those privacy boundaries ought to be respected.
Well, yes, but he's a public figure, and there were no boundaries, or very few, ultimately, as that whole story came out. And one more candidate here. Then-citizen Barack Obama, senator, in his 08 presidential campaign, Katie Couric interviewed the hopeful presidential aspirant about his thoughts on why some politicians risk their career committing infidelity. Here's Barack Obama.
The more I'm in public, I mean, I don't even want to pick my nose. I'm assuming everybody's watching, and it's an interesting. I'll leave that to the psychologists.
Squeaky clean President Obama so far, with his kind of white picket fence, as far as we know, marriage to Michelle Obama stands in sharp contrast to a lot of what we're seeing here. Nancy, Marisa, let me bring some of our listeners in. They've been waiting. Mary in Weatog, Connecticut. Mary, thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. I've been thinking about this, everything that's been said, and I really think it's an issue of aging alpha males who are kind of in the winter of their lives. And somehow, you know, Viagra, to me, plays maybe a huge role, because most of the men from their late 30s, with Tiger Woods on up to everybody last week, that it seems to be that men who are aging, you know, they're willing to risk their reputations, their careers, their lives, you know, their wives' happiness, their children's, you know, their children will be humiliated, like, forever. And they're willing to do this, and I honestly wonder if it's some sort of male menopause or a Viagra-infused lifestyle, because I'm sort of shocked over how much Viagra and other hormonal pills are sort of advertised on a daily basis in TV.
Mary, let us pick it up right there, if I may. Nancy Gibbs, let me come to you. I don't know what's chemically fueled here, but aging alpha males is what Mary sees, and she wonders about the risk they're taking. They're smart guys. They know how big the risk is.
Well, you know, that question was always raised, particularly about John F. Kennedy, who, of course, you know, was a very young man when he became president, and it was in the pre-Viagra days, and mm-hmm. his behavior was reckless to the point of incomprehensible. And we, at the time, to the extent that it was known and rumored about and amongst reporters who covered him, we lived in a different political culture at the time, and so it was not public in the way, obviously, anything comparable would be now. But this, you know, this pattern that we're discussing of men reaching positions of power and then behaving in incomprehensible ways goes right back all the way through American history, through world history. And so I'm not sure that maybe there is a biological element to it. I'm in no position to comment on that. But certainly it is not a new phenomenon.
I mean, it's interesting, well, though, the study that you cited, excuse me just a second, Marisa, this upcoming study to be in the publication Psychological Science, and I'm reading a little bit in advance there, and here's one of the authors. They say, it says, as a social psychologist, I believe that the situation is everything, and that the situation or instance is often stronger than the individual, I guess, of opportunity and power. And then he says, as more and more women are in greater positions of power and are considered equal to men, then familiar assumptions about their behavior may also change. That it's the implication, Nancy Gibbs, that men have had the power, so we think of men as the ones who do this, but if and when women have comparable power, they'll do it too. Does that ring true to you, Nancy?
Well, their survey certainly found that it was true of both men and women, and there are many people who say that the reason that we don't have these stories regarding women is just the women continue to be such a small minority of top executives and, for that matter, you know, members of Congress and of the Senate. You know, we don't know the answer. It may be a matter of numbers. It may be something else. We just don't know.
Let's go to Kate in North Providence, Rhode Island. Kate, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I guess I'm following up a little bit on the older man syndrome. And I guess what sort of concerns me sometimes is, you know, sexual assault is one thing, obviously, and
yes,
rape and power play. But I think in some relationships, in an affair, for instance, that's mutual and consensual on some level, that a woman has a lot of power in a sexual relationship. And a young woman with an older man who is, I forget how the other caller put it, but sort of in the sunset of their sexual life, to their way of thinking, or their sexual power, that a young, you know, sex is so sort of outside the realm of everything else. That's what sort of makes it so magical. And I think that sometimes a young woman can carry a lot of power. Not that she's using it or anybody. I'm not talking in terms of victimization of men or victimization of women sometimes.
You mean a young woman who might, you're imagining consent to this powerful man's advances? Is that what you're saying?
Well, if it's an affair and both people are choosing it, then it seems to me it's consensual. Otherwise, the woman appears to be a sort of a victim, and I'm not sure that's always the case. I think there's an allure to power, and I think that there's an allure to a mature, accomplished, older man sometimes.
Yes,
so I'm not
yes.
sure that all the blame needs to go, and I'm not even talking in terms of blame or judgment or any of that. I'm just noticing that, like, you know, as a young woman myself years ago, like there's a certain power in being a young woman and I think an older man can be attracted to, you know, and so I don't think it's all completely one-sided.
Kate, we've got it. Of course, it all gets complicated in a hurry. In this case, Marisa, I mean, this woman who's younger than Arnold Schwarzenegger, but not a whole lot younger, really, also worked for him. She was his, you know, his household staff, his maid. Now, you know, she's retired and had a severance package and has a decent house with 100 television cameras camped in front of it right now. But what about Kate's observation here when it comes to Arnold Schwarzenegger, Marisa?
Well, I think it's important to note that this affair, at least part of it, we don't know if it went on longer than just one event or many years, happened, you know, 13 years ago. So at that point, you know, he was sort of in the peak of his movie career. So I wouldn't say that this was a man, you know, who was older necessarily or sort of in his twilight years. And I also thought it was interesting when you played that clip of Ensign, like he begun his quote unquote apology by saying he was caught up in the hype. And I think you see this a lot where men who are caught in these circumstances sort of take responsibility, but not entirely. When Schwarzenegger apologized this week, he said, I've already apologized to my friends and family. I deserve, you know, the anger and disappointment. But he didn't really apologize to the people of California. And I've heard from a lot of folks who really feel like he should have, that regardless of whether this happened when he was in office, that it was a betrayal of their trust to some extent because he was lying about something for so long. And, you know, let's not forget in this case, there's another victim as well, this child who we're not sure exactly, but it seems plausible didn't know who his father was until this week. So, you know, it's not
and
just
Schwarzenegger's
about these
two own people. Children who are dealing with a kind of betrayal
without
of
question.
A different
yeah.
sort.
Oh, yes, definitely. And so I think all five of his children are really, you know, beyond the woman and whatever the dynamics of their relationship, they are innocent victims who had no say in any of this, and not to mention his wife, of course, and who are really going to feel the effects of this forever. So I think that, you know, there is when you have these dynamics of men in power like this, it does sort of have a ripple effect far beyond just the person, you know, the two people involved in the affair.
And of course, whether it's
in other cases, attack.
Yeah, whether it's in Europe or in the United States, there's also a voyeuristic angle to this, or a kind of a public fantasy. Here's a little clip from the popular TV show. This is from Gossip Girl, about college-age Manhattan socialites. One of the main characters there, Serena, has an affair in the show with the married Congressman Tripp Vanderbilt. And here's Blake Lively as the young Serena and Holly Fain as their congressman's wife. You can hear the kind of public fantasy playing out here.
Tripp and I aren't getting divorced. You can have him in private, but I get him in public. He keeps his career, I keep my pride and position, and you get whatever you're getting. Screwed, I think they call it.
You're asking me to be your husband's mistress?
It's a time-honored political tradition. I'm Jackie, you're Marilyn. I love Tripp, and I'd do anything to make him happy.
There's the TV version of a lot of real heartache this week. Carol in Brent Lake, New York. Thanks for calling, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi. I was thinking about this as far as it's just rich and powerful men in general exude a, that alpha male sexuality. I mean, I'm in my 60s now, but in my 20s, I had affairs with rich men. First of all, they're a lot of fun, and they do have this whole issue of being free. I mean, that it's like they are above the rules. And I can understand how women would be attracted. In other words, they're going to have women that they're not even looking for that are going to be attracted to them just by who they are and how much money they have and this feeling of invincibility that they offer.
So does that make you, I don't know, sympathetic or feel forgiving? Or is it, I mean, surely it's an entirely different thing in this Dominic Strauss-Kahn allegations anyway.
And not for the French guy. I mean, if he has to have had women falling over themselves, so why would he take somebody that didn't want him? But men, I mean, like the tiger, that have women that are sort of, you know, attracted to him and making plays for them, and it's something that young women are attracted to, that kind of thing, and it's because they are so much fun and have that virility to them.
Carol, I appreciate your call. I'm glad it worked out fun for you. I am. Patty in Foxborough, Massachusetts. Patty, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wondered if there's a connection between people in power who feel that this is okay. And I heard another author on another program talking about socialized psychopaths in the corporate world, and that 4% of corporate America is actually this sort of socialized psychopath that has a lack of empathy for people, short fuses, a feeling of entitlement.
Are those winners? By that study, that 4%, are they at the top or the bottom of the corporate ladder?
Well, I suppose that depends on where you're looking up at or down at them, I suppose. They just exist.
Yeah. I don't know. Socialized psychopaths. Nancy, we don't want to think that that's what we're led by.
No, I think, though, that a number of your callers are raising an interesting question about what the public has a right to know about people in public life. And one thing that we haven't talked about yet is just the hypocrisy factor, that even if we're not dealing with something, as in the charges against Dominic Strauss-Kahn, that is violent and criminal, even if we're not dealing with something that necessarily involves an abuse of power, as we're concerned about with someone like Arnold and an employee, there are still cases of politicians and public figures who present themselves as, you know, family values champions.
Newt Gingrich impeaching Bill Clinton as he himself was having an affair. Talk about layers of deceit.
This would be the classic example, or Louisiana Senator David Vitter, who, you know, whose name turns up in the little black book of the D.C. madam. And so, you know, what's very interesting to me is how do citizens react to that? And so let us imagine that we're now, turn the clock back and Arnold Schwarzenegger is running for governor. Had he come forward at the time and said, you know, I apologize to all the women who I have offended, as he did. And, oh, by the way, here's this other thing I should tell you about. I have this love child from this affair that I had with an employee. It's up to you of whether you think that disqualifies me to be governor. Is that what we expect, demand, require? Is the anger that he did not volunteer that information somehow?
Marisa, how do you think that would have played in 2003?
Probably not well, but I mean, I think a lot of the sort of sense of anger and outrage is not just that he sort of led the public on and lied to us, but that he lied to his own family. I also think it's important to note that Arnold Schwarzenegger, while not sort of a super hardcore right-wing values guy, did espouse many times about how important having a family structure was for kids and how having a strong father figure is really sort of an important social role in terms of you know, raising kids correctly. And so I think there's some hypocrisy there as well, especially if, you know, this kid didn't even know if this was that this was his father.
Nancy,
and I think that's right. Is that that's really where people, you know, that now people sympathize tremendously with Maria Shriver. If this had been, you know, a matter between them, that was their business to in her decision of whether she's going to forgive him or not. But the fact that she was out there, and as Marissa explained, she saved his campaign by vouching for his character. You know, in a sense, we are all her sisters now and saying, hey, how could you do this to this woman?
Your big piece concludes, what matters is not prudishness. We've left that far behind, but prudence, a sense that public figures should be discouraged from destroying themselves and their families, even if we gawk at the results when they do. And principle, you write there, that power is a privilege not to be abused. And yet the story comes again and again. And this week, a chance to really give it some contemplation. Nancy Gibbs, executive editor at Time magazine. It's always great to talk with you, Nancy. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
And Marissa Lagos at the San Francisco Chronicle. You're terrific, Marissa. Thanks for your reporting and your time with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.